How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 203 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there, and leave a review once you're on that page. Find us on audioboom.com as well. You can log on to normantranscript.com. You can check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. See all my Thunder coverage there. I've got Thunder player evaluations up there on the site right now. So the first week I did the big men. Did I do the big men first? I do the wings first, followed by the big men. This week it's finally the guards. So I've got four players left at the time of recording this. Monday is Victor Oladipo. Tuesday is going to be Samaje Christen. Going to be finishing off Friday with the Russell Westbrook player evaluation. A couple more guards thrown in there as well, Alex Abrines and Norris Cole. So those guys are all going to be this week. I'm going to be doing those corresponding podcasts every Thursday as well. So I have my player evaluation podcast the first Thursday doing the wings, last week doing the bigs. This Thursday, the next episode, it's going to be doing the guards. Right now, though, breathing heavily on the other line is through the Skype line, talking some playoffs, talking whatever the heck is going on with Enes Kanter right now, from Vice Sports, Michael Pina. Second time guest now.
Yes, thank you for that introduction. I didn't mean to blow up your spot with my heavy breathing, Fred.
It's okay. You know, sometimes we all breathe.
That's true.
We all breathe. It all happens. I can't really knock somebody for breathing.
No, it would be a silly criticism.
It would be a hypocritical one.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
I'll admit it. I breathe. I'm not ashamed to admit it. At some point, we're going to run out of oxygen.
This podcast is really off to quite the start.
It's all right. They can't cancel me at this point. They can't. They have no one else to do this.
No,
they can't fire me. They know what they're getting.
You're irreplaceable.
It's true. I'm only irreplaceable because there is like physically nobody else who could possibly do the podcast. It's not because of any sort of like quality reason. It's just because no one else is available to do this, and that's it.
It's a good leveraging point that you have there.
Yeah, yeah. How weird is this? How weird is it that Marcus Smart played a good basketball game?
Yeah, I knew. I didn't know you were going to hit me with that this early.
Well, for those who don't know. Pina is like the only Marcus Smart stan in existence.
Whoa. First, I don't think that's true.
Yes, it is.
No, okay.
To your degree, you are a Marcus Smart stan the same way like annoying internet people are Kobe stans. To like the same level.
That hurt a lot. That hurt a lot.
So I make sure to exclusively troll you about Marcus Smart. I feel like it's my purpose in life. To knock Marcus Smart down as many pegs as I possibly can whenever I talk to you.
You do, and I will say that there were no text messages last night when he went 7-for-10 from beyond the arc, and you know, single handedly saved the Boston Celtics season and made this a competitive series.
Because I wasn't believing what I was saying.
And those last two statements are obviously said in jest. The series is obviously going to end in five games, but yeah, Marcus played really well. And, you know, even beyond the 3-point shooting, which was ridiculous and will never happen again, probably for the rest of his career, you know, he brought the hashtag winning plays in other areas as well. So I just love him so much. And I was very happy to see him, you know, commandeer a successful offense on the road in a must win game.
If only he could make an impact in any other game that he played.
Oh, my Jesus.
Oh, God. I Someone is like going to tweet this at Marcus Smart now and think, I don't think Marcus Smart is good just because I'm viciously insulting him. But I want Marcus Smart to know, I actually, this is not an insult aimed at you. This is an insult aimed at Michael Pina.
Yeah.
With you just being, you're collateral damage. That's all it is. I actually think you're a wonderful defender and very solid role player. I just don't think you are the second coming of Jerry West.
You know, he's only 23, so we will see, Fred. There's a lot of time left in his career.
He's going to be – oh, now I'm coughing like crazy. He's going to be like 48 years old, and you're going to be like, he's not even 50 yet, Fred. I'm telling you, anything can happen. Anything can happen. You're going to be like –
You never want to give up on a talent like this, no matter how old.
You're going to be like pulling for like after he retires. You're going to be like, watch, I'm telling you, he's – it's going to be unbelievable working in a front office somewhere. No one's giving him a chance, but he would be the best GM in the league.
Whichever team gives a 45-year-old Marcus Smart a workout, they really have the advantage, I think, moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. How weird is this Enes Kanter stuff?
Pretty weird.
Should we give the background? I'll give a brief background, but let's be real.
Okay.
If you listen to this podcast, then you probably already know the news of the last 72 hours, but Enes Kanter was traveling, doing a tour through Asia and Europe with his foundation, the Enes Kanter Light Foundation, and traveling to a bunch of different countries. And as he arrived in Romania on Saturday morning, turns out the Turkish government had canceled his passport, which is not rare. They've done that to thousands of citizens who have spoken out against Erdogan, who is the president of Turkey, and Kanter has been very politically active and very, very against Erdogan, and is openly part of Fethullah Gulen's movement, which is up against Erdogan. And Erdogan has alleged that Gulen led a coup against him in 2016. And Kanter openly speaks out against Erdogan, who Trump hosted at the White House kind of inexplicably. A couple of weeks ago, I couldn't believe that happened at the time that it happened. And now he's, you know, in the NBA news, not just the world news and the political news. It's bled into the NBA now, too, because of this Kanter stuff. Kanter ended up getting back. He, even without a passport, he was able to get on a flight to London and then back into the U.S. and pass customs, where Homeland Security helped him out. And he's basically been on a huge media tour because Enes Kanter loves media tours. He's basically been on a huge media tour since. He did a press conference on Monday morning, and all stuff on the press conference up on the website. And he was on Outside the Lines, and he was on CBS, and I think he's going to do other stuff as well. So, you know, stay tuned for Enes Kanter stuff. And you know where you can get the best Enes Kanter coverage, Pina?
Right here.
Right here.
Over the next 20 minutes.
Crazy story, though.
Yeah, you know, I've followed along with what's happening in Turkey as much as I can, and you know, little nibbles here and there. It seems to be very tragic. Just, you know, anytime there's an authoritarian dictator ruling a nation and persecuting his people for speaking out and in very undemocratic ways, it's tragic. And what I find to be just a little bit ironic here is, you know, whenever someone stifles a public figure like Kanter, and, you know, he, by doing this, by revoking his passport and sending him back to the United States and probably leading to a U.S. citizenship for Kanter, he's really, you know, given Kanter a microphone even louder than he would have previously had. I just don't understand pouring gasoline on the fire if you're the Turkish government and you want this guy to go away. This is not the way to do it. But trying to find logic in the mind of a dictator in a regime such as this one is not really possible. So sadness all around, and it's good to see Kanter back in the United States and safe and sound.
Yeah, I think part of it, I mean, it was obviously an attempt to try to get him deported back to Turkey so they could, you know, probably arrest him and, you know,
yeah,
whatever else happens to him there. But yeah, I mean, it's obviously an attempt to get him back to Turkey so that they can arrest him, like they've done many, many critics of that presidential regime in Turkey. And with Kanner specifically, yeah, I mean, it is a risky political move on their part from the context, like you said. Now, all of a sudden, Enes Kanter has always spoken out against Erdogan. He's never quite had a problem with it, although a lot of the times this year, people come to the scrum, especially at the beginning of the year. You know, we were coming off of his parents disowning him because of this kind of stuff, and, you know, the rest of his family disassociating from him. And he would start off scrums sometimes by saying, like, all right, guys, no politics questions, because I think, you know, they were worried about his safety and even the safety of other guys on the team, because who knows, you know, what it takes. Takes one you know, person to cause, you know, a problem for everybody else on the team, you know, no matter how bad that problem might be. And so he didn't really talk about it throughout the year. And this kind of gave him, he's always kind of had a local platform for this, but he's not a big enough star to where there's a national platform for it, you know. But now all of a sudden, because of this, he's on Outside the Lines and he's doing press conferences about it. And He is kind of raising awareness to a degree, and that's something he said in his press conference a lot. He wants to give a voice to the innocent, and that's something that's kind of amounted from this, obviously unintentionally from the Turkish side, but that's something that Kanner is definitely using to his advantage right now.
No, and it's definitely a silver lining whenever someone with this type of platform, whether it be a professional athlete or anyone else in the public eye, that when they are persecuted in their ability to speak out against it and really, as you said, raise awareness. It's kind of a silver lining, and you know, it's relatively, you know, not, you would rather this whole situation never happened in terms of what is happening in his home nation. But for him to be able to speak out the way he does, that it is good to raise awareness about it. And I'm glad that he is being as outspoken as he is. I have a quick question for you. So I know that Kanter's family has disowned him, or his father did, and then his siblings do not speak with him. Is that a genuine thing where they are in support of the Turkish government, or is that a thing where they're just trying to protect themselves because they still live there? And, you know, speaking out is obviously dangerous.
It's hard to tell for sure. It seems to be more likely the latter from the way Kanner talks about his parents. He actually does talk about his brother. His brother is a college basketball player in the U.S.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, his brother plays at, oh, now I'm forgetting, like maybe UW Green Bay. We looking this up?
I'm trying, yeah.
I think he plays at UW Green Bay. Karim Kanner is his name.
Oh, K-E-R-E-M. It looks like he might transfer to Michigan State is the first thing that happened when I Googled him, but that could be incorrect. But okay, yeah, so well, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that.
So yeah, he does talk to his brother, and he said during this presser today that that like even like his brother he asked his parents about or he asked his brother about his parents. Like that was a thing that he mentioned during this press conference. He said that, you know, he said, my brother told me that my dad can't even go to the supermarket because he went to this, my parents, my family can't even go to dinner. And my brother told me my dad went to the supermarket and someone spit on his face. So like there, it does seem to be, and even if they did support the current regime, like it would still be something that they would have to do for their own safety because of, you know, just kind of being associated with Enes and not denouncing what he said is just so dangerous for you if you're going to live in that country with everything that happens if you speak out against the current government.
Right. It looks like his brother, just to clarify, is apparently transferring to Xavier. So good for him.
The Samaje Christian route.
Exactly.
I've always wanted Samaje Christian and Xavier Henry to have a conversation about Samaje Christian's time at Xavier, and Xavier Henry to be really confused by the pronunciation.
Is that what you've always wanted, Fred?
Well, Xavier Henry played for the OKC Blue this year, so all the timing worked out well, and I just kind of wanted it to come out. So Isaac Christian would be like, Xavier Hammer would be like, so you went to Xavier, right? So I was just like, what are you talking about? You're like, didn't you go to school? Didn't you go to Xavier University? Xavier? Yeah, Xavier. That's kind of what I just...
Yeah, that would make for a good conversation. So where do we go from here with Cantor, do you think?
From a basketball perspective, I am curious as hell to find out how the heck he's going to get around.
Right, so... From what I'm reading, it looks like he's trying to expedite the process of his citizenship, and it looks like that normally he has a green card now, and it looks like the process takes, or he would have between 3 and 4, maybe 5 more years to get citizenship under normal circumstances. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, under normal circumstances. But there are certain circumstances in which you can expedite the process to become a citizen. I am curious to know, like, what will end up happening. Because, first of all, they're going to play the Raptors next year.
Right.
Is he not going to play in that game? He's going to need a passport. They're going to need something. Now, he said that they're trying to work on something to at least get him some kind of special papers, I believe was what he said, so that he could play in that game. But that's going to be tough because you got to go through customs when you land in Toronto. I don't think the NBA is going to, like, move that game to Buffalo just for Ennis. So that's something. There's also a law that's kind of about to go into effect. I'm not quite sure exactly when, but it's relatively soon, that in Oklahoma, if you're an Oklahoma resident and you have an Oklahoma state ID, then, and this is true already for some other states, then you can't travel at all, like even domestically. You can't travel with a state-issued ID. You need a federal-issued ID, so a passport. And he won't be able to get on a plane with an Oklahoma driver's license, which I believe is what he has. So if he's got just the Oklahoma driver's license and no passport, how's he going to travel at all once that comes down, if that's all that he has? So I am curious to know.
Whoa. What? This law sounds absolutely insane. What? What?
It's a thing in other states too. Like, it's true in Missouri now. You need like a federal issued ID. I'm not quite sure on all the details of it, but you need a federal issued ID. It's not enforced yet in Missouri. But basically you're going to need to travel with a passport as opposed to a state ID.
Very interesting.
Yes.
And then also, in addition to, you know, restricting him from playing and earning his livelihood, you know, apparently his charity, a majority of his work is done overseas. And, you know, restricting his ability to travel internationally restricts his ability to help others with his charitable foundation. So it's so stupid, all of this. It really is.
He travels a lot. He's on the road for like all of the summer usually. He went to 14 countries last summer. He was planning on going to 17 this summer. Like he travels a ton. And he's one of those guys, like a lot of guys do the charity work that's like in front of the camera, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And trust me, Ennis loves to be in front of the camera. He is of that personality. He just loves it. It's what makes him endearing. But he does a lot of stuff on his own that people don't really find out about, that he doesn't care if people find out about. Like he spends his whole summers just doing stuff for his foundation, and that's it. And that's kind of all he does over the summer. He just does stuff with his foundation and visits schools and visits programs for little kids and puts on camps for young kids. And that's kind of just what he does all summer. He just hangs out with a bunch of kids in a bunch of different countries. And that's, you know, his foundation is more focused at education and young children and that kind of stuff. And he just spends the whole summer just hanging out with kids and putting on camps for underprivileged kids in, you know, a lot of you know, poorer countries or areas of other countries, you know, poor areas of other countries, and that's a loss. That's a loss. Yep. That he's not able to do that now because he does a lot of good.
That is a tragedy. And I guess, you know, spinning this towards basketball real quick. So he is eligible to, he has a player option in the 2018-19 season, I believe.
Yeah.
For $18.6 million, I'm looking at right now. So you would think he would most likely opt out of that given his age and where the cap will be. You know, it'll be interesting to see if this is not resolved by then, which is very possible, how this affects his free agency too.
Or how this affects the potential trade market for him this summer if the Thunder are having conversations about him.
That is another great point, because you would think, you know, and a lot of when I've been looking at, you know, their future outlook in their short term and how they want to improve themselves here as Russell Westbrook gets older and older, moving Kanter and clearing cap space is a huge part of their flexibility. And if no one wants to trade for him and take on that contract, that's a great point by you. That could really be a wrench in Sam Presti's plans.
So you're also, I will say this, Thunder fans will at least appreciate this part. I'm changing the topic now. We got to sell like 15 minutes of Kanter talking. Along with being a Marcus Smart stan, is it fair for me to call you an Andre Robertson stan? Or are you just kind of a higher person on Andre Robertson than the average human being?
I recognize Andre Robertson's weaknesses like anybody else, and I understand the importance of spacing in the NBA and the importance of being a wing and being able to hit free throws, which was a big deal in the first round, obviously. But yeah, that being said, I praising his defense, which I think it's humongous, just the value that he brings. And I think standing for Andre Robertson, that is my corner. I will fess up. I think his restricted free agency this summer will be very fascinating to see how teams balance the dichotomy between, you know, the such positive attributes he brings on one side of the ball and such negative attributes he brings on the other. And it'll be interesting to see if there's a team out there that, you know, sees the defensive positives and convinces themselves that they are able to work on his jumper and just improve that to, you know, a semi-respectable degree, or at least, you know, the free throw shooting, which you would think is something that he can improve upon, being that he's still only 25 years old, I believe. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if a team like the Brooklyn Nets throws a big offer sheet at him. And, you know, it puts the Thunder in a really tricky spot if that were to happen, because, you know, they losing him, not paying him is not really an option, I don't think, given just how valuable he is on the defensive end and, you know, their cap situation.
How high up? The reason I bring this up is because I want to know your opinion on how high. If you're Sam Presti right now, and you have sole authority over the entire organization, you make the decision on how high you're going for Andre Robertson. So how high would you go for Andre Robertson? What's the offer? I mean, you know, there is a number. Everyone's got a number. He's obviously the max guy, so you got a number. What is your number to where you say, we can't do it, we can't match on that? And keep in mind, the Thunder are only like $10 million away from the luxury tax.
Yeah, this is tough because, you know, it's entirely feasible that a team – so Alan Crabb is making $18.5 million, or he made $18.5 million this year. On a 4-year deal, he's making 19.3 next season.
I don't think this year's market is comparable to last year's, though. A lot of people compare, like, you know, look at what Solomon Hill got, or look at what Alan Crabb got, or look at what Tyler Johnson got. And I just don't think this year's market is comparable to last year's, because last year teams had a combined like $1 billion in cap space, all 30 teams. And this year teams have like a third of that. So there's not that market.
The cap is still, you know, rising at a degree
rising. And I'm not saying that Andre Robertson should be graded on the scale of what players made 3 years ago. I'm just saying I don't think there's going to be money thrown around this summer like there was last year between the buyer's remorse that there is from the contracts like the Allen Crabbe contract or your boy Evan Turner or some other ones.
I had to throw that in there.
I did. Is he not your boy?
He is my boy. But I will
he's a good guy to be. He's great.
Yeah, he's cool.
He's got a case for funniest player in the NBA.
Oh, he's the Michael Jordan of NBA comedians.
He's extremely funny.
He's good stuff. If you're not following him on Twitter, you should be. But and to your point, you know, the cap leveling out over these next few years is also a detriment factor in wanting to, you know, overpay on a long-term deal for a guy like Roberson. But I do think...
What's your number?
Yeah, this is tough. I think 15, maybe.
Okay. So if he gets offered, let's say Brooklyn offers him 64 for 4, you're walking away?
Yeah, so I'm soft on 15. Like, I would probably... I don't know. I would not walk away from that, even though I just said 15. I just don't think that they really have a lot of options, and he's so good defensively. And you're in my opinion right now, obviously the spacing around Westbrook is a priority. You need to provide him with space, but I think a big factor in Westbrook's success and how he plays, especially during the regular season, is in the open floor, off missed shots, off defensive rebounds, off turnovers, getting out in transition. And Roberson is a huge factor in that. And his ability to guard the opposing team's best player and really restrict what they want to do without help most of the time is another huge reason why they had so much success this year. And they, frankly, as a team, overperformed from my personal expectations. So, you know, if they have any optimism at all that his shot can be respectable, then I don't even know what you do. But you're right to point out the luxury tax is also a concern and how that affects what they do with the mid-level exception this summer too. So that's
how this stuff all ties together, like re-signing Robertson, right. Re-signing Gibson, trading Kanter. Like, Kanter's a lot of money, where if you can unload Kanter and, you know, unload Kanter and into space, and you can unload, whether it's, you know, all $17 million that he's owed or the vast majority of it, because you bring back, you know, a small contract or whatever it is. Like, if you're able to do that, then that's a big, you know, that's a big help in terms of just, you're not going to open up cap room by doing that. You're not going to open up cap room, but you are going to be able to, more likely, you're going to make it easier to get under the luxury tax while still re-signing Roberson and still possibly using a good portion of that mid-level as well.
Right. So what I throw the question back at you. What is your number for Roberson?
I actually have the same answer as you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Probably cool. Around that 15 marker. I've asked a bunch of execs around the league, and they think he's going to get somewhere between 12 to 15 a year.
Okay, I could see it going higher, but that would probably be a safe.
I've received answers that are higher, but they're kind of said in like a high voice. You know what I mean? They're kind of like the answers that I get that are like stable answers are 12 to 15, and every once in a while, someone will be like, maybe he could get 18. I don't know, but there's you know, the stable answers. Yeah, I think he'll get 13. Yeah, I think he'll get 12 to 15, something like that. That's kind of what the range is.
Right.
I think he's targeting 15.
Okay. Well, he deserves that money. Yeah, I'm a big fan, and I it was tough to see him struggle the ways he did during that first round series, because I think he's a really valuable player.
Yeah, I mean, what's so interesting about that is, like, it's funny the way you phrase it, because, like, struggles in the ways that he did in that first round series, and, like, the free throws were... They killed him in the free throws, but he was actually great in the first almost four games of that series. And then at the very end of game four, they mentally annihilated him. And he just never recovered from the free throw stuff, and it affected every single part of his game because he was not good in game five. But even independent of the threes that were going in, like, he shot 40-some-odd percent from three in that series and obviously made an unsustainably, like, hilarious – like, he had his equivalent of that Marcus Smart game three. He had that in game one against Houston where he was just hitting a bunch of threes. And that's not a thing that'll happen. But, like, independent of that, like, he was playing great defense on Harden, and he was cutting extremely well. He was running some pick and rolls. He was passing pretty well. He was – playing well in transition. He was obviously being an excellent transition defender on the other end. Like, he was doing, he was playing the best basketball maybe that he's ever played for the first three and a fraction games of that series. And then the fouling started and he just reverted into his shell completely.
Yeah. And that's, well, it's humiliating. I mean, for anyone to be intentionally fouled and sent to the line and, you know, the whole, everyone's just looking at you. And everyone thinks that you're going to miss. Like, the strategy of the other team is this dude sucks. We got to put him on the line, yada, yada, yada. And that's just, it's humongously embarrassing. How did you just phrase it? They mentally annihilated him.
I did.
That's not a harsh take. That's pretty accurate. Going 2-for-12 from the free throw line is not what you want to do in a game four in the playoffs. But yeah, he was making threes, but as we all know, like, that's like, they were so, so wide open. And that's the whole scheme is like designed. Houston's entire scheme is designed for him to let fire from that range. So there, even when he does make them, it's like, cool, I guess. But I like his versatility. You need players who can guard multiple positions. I think he did a really good job on Harden all year, including in that series. So, yeah, it'll be a shame if they lose him, but I could see another team being really interested this summer.
Before we wrap up, I got to say, very, very happy for you. Got this vice job. Not dealing with our former employer, Bleacher Report, anymore.
No comment.
Yeah, no, they're my former employer too.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Yeah, we're both. Everyone worked for Bleacher Report at some point.
We are ex-colleagues.
We are. Well, we're ex-colleagues at Fox.
That is true as well.
We worked at Fox together for the longest amount of time.
Yes, we did. Those were fun times.
And then Fox got rid of everybody. So I always get very excited when I see somebody who I like and who I somewhat respect ending up at a really good gig, and you're doing a great job at Vice, and if people aren't reading your stuff, they're seriously missing out.
Well, Fred, thank you very much for that. I very much appreciate it.
Tell the listeners where they can find you and what you've got. If you got anything coming out, what you've got.
Yeah, so, well, Twitter, my Twitter handle is Michael V. Pina. Fred likes to constantly remind people that my initials are MVP.
I do.
That is true, as you can tell from the Twitter handle.
I've never asked you this, but did your parents, were they aware that they were initialing you MVP? Was that like a... Were they conscious of that at all when they named you? Or was it like after the fact at some point? I mean, I assume they know now.
They do know now. I don't think that was too conscious. My middle name is my dad and my grandfather's first name. And then Michael is just like a dope ass name. So, but and super original.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't know any other Michaels.
No. So I got that corner as well. But yeah, no, I don't think that was the plan at first. But it was a cool side effect, especially when I had, you know, the middle school LL Bean backpack with your initials. Like, that was the most popular that I've ever been in my life.
You must have looked really arrogant though to people who didn't know you.
Oh yeah. But you assumed that there were people who didn't know me. Like, that's how popular I was with that backpack.
Even when you were walking down the streets of Boston, people, just random strangers in the street would be like, hey, that's Michael. It's Michael Pina.
Correct. Yes, that's basically what happened.
What else you got? Anything right
now? Yeah, no, just vicesports.com. I'm for the playoffs at least, I'm basically throwing up one, maybe even two stories a day. So head over there. And then we have some fun things that I can't get too far into over the summer, which will be cool. Some cool projects. And I'll be doing some draft stuff as well. So, yeah, just head over there. Follow me on Twitter. And that about covers it.
And you're moving to the best city in the world.
I'm moving to one city, yeah. I am moving to New York. That is correct. Yeah, I was actually there this weekend. Yeah, it's a pretty good city. It's no Oklahoma City.
Oh, wow, way to pander to the audience.
Yeah. but it'll be fun. Yeah, I was actually there this weekend visiting my brother. And very cool city, as usual. The weather was nice, which I appreciated.
Yeah, well, that tends to happen in May.
That's true. It's not in Boston. It's been terrible.
Really?
Terrible May. Yeah. 50 is rainy almost every day.
You miss LA? You miss LA weather ever?
I do, Fred. Thanks for asking. Yeah. It's LA weather is irreplaceable. It's unbelievable.
I kind of prefer San Francisco weather.
I appreciate a good sweater day for sure. And San Francisco weather is basically sweater weather
all the time.
24/7, 365.
I love sweater weather.
Yeah, it's sweater. Yeah, everybody looks good in a sweater. That's my take on sweaters.
It also leads to the most versatile wardrobe, because you can be you can wear, you know, your dress shirt or whatever, and you can get away with it. You can throw a light jacket on. You can throw a sweater on. You can throw a heavier jacket on and take that off. You can really layer. It really just leads to a much more versatile wardrobe than like 74. Like 74, you're not going to wear a jacket, but 64, you can get away with a light jacket.
What I'll say about LA weather, though, is you never have to, like, think about what you're going to wear. So, like, your productivity increases, like, 5% every day in that you wake up, you look outside, it's sunny, it's 75 degrees, there's no wind. It's like, oh, okay, shorts, t-shirt, the end. And, like, I guess you can fall into a little bit of a rut here and there, but the simplicity of it all is it's an envious lifestyle for sure.
That does sound nice. That is not the case in Oklahoma, which has the most like bipolar and schizophrenic weather you could possibly have. It just goes crazy. It's like so nice one day, and then the next day it's 58 and raining, and then the next day it's 92 and humid as hell. And you're just like, what is going on? And then there's an earthquake, and then the next day there are tornadoes. And you're just like, what is happening in this insane place that I live?
Yeah, minus the earthquakes and the tornadoes. That's basically New England.
Yeah.
But I guess we can sub in blizzards. That's
yes, true.
And those are terrible.
We don't really get that much snow here. That's a nice thing.
That's good. Snow is the worst.
But you know, there are more earthquakes in Oklahoma than there are in any other state now.
Mm-hmm. That is disturbing.
Yes, it's from the fracking. The man-made earthquakes, lots of fun, the way we're destroying our earth. And then you got all the tornadoes.
Don't seem like fun either.
Yeah, no, I mean they're even when there aren't tornadoes, it just gets crazy windy, like it'll just get to be like an insane storm every few months where it's just like an insane storm and trees get blown over on my block. And I'm just like, how has a tree never landed on my car? Like, this is amazing. The weather here is just, it must be amazing. I've met multiple people who aren't from here who like work for the National Weather Service. And I ask them why they moved here, and they're like, well, this is like the greatest place that I could possibly live for my job. It's so fascinating.
You've met multiple people who work for the National Weather Service?
Well, National Weather Service is based in Norman, Oklahoma. And I write
for... I did not know that.
Not that many people live in Norman, Oklahoma. So...
Oh, interesting. An interesting bunch of friends you got there, Fred.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I wouldn't say I'm friends with anyone who works for the National Weather Service, but I have met multiple people who work for the National Weather Service. I do write for the Norman paper, in case you're unaware.
That is true. I heard it in the introduction.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to hear it again in a second. You can remember I'm on every Tuesday and Thursday night now, no more 5 days a week. At some point, like I've said the last few episodes, I'm going to get back to five. You know, I don't know if it'll be 5 days specifically a week, but I'm going to get back to either three or four, maybe 5 days a week as we approach the draft and the MVP or the awards show at the end of June and free agency at the beginning of July, summer league, all that kind of stuff. I'm going to be ramping it up with more content. For now, though, just Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I'll be back again Thursday with the evaluation of all the guards. You can head on to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. Questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. And hey, how about this part? Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs, and you can check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and see what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. Pina, thanks for coming on, as always. I'll see you in Vegas Summer League, I guess?
Yep, that is true.
Vegas Summer League. Thank you
for having me, buddy.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for coming on. Second time I've had you on. Maybe we'll make it a third time at some point. Maybe we'll impromptu podcast when we're in Vegas.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah. Well, Thursday I'm going to be doing the evaluation of all the guards, like I said. Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.